The heat of the auditorium made my head ring, and my dress felt like it was gripping tightly onto my skin. Around me were black folk, littered in every corner of the church auditorium, their bodies pressed closely together. From afar, their bodies seemed to blend, making it hard to tell just how many people sat in each pew. It was not unusual at this time of year to have a sudden influx of new faces. The Sunday before Christmas, we celebrated Thanksgiving, where families wore matching Ankara and lace, and the children danced in front of the entire church, their bodies sticky with sweat as they made moves that matched the deafening sound of the drums. Beside me, my grandmother was dancing, hips swaying to the rhythms of the talking drum, her smile wide enough to expose the stark contrast between her pearl-white teeth and the dark opening between them. I wanted to dance, too, free my limbs, take off my shoes and place them underneath the pew in front of me, join the raucous congregation, their voices gradually rising above the instruments as they sang, "Come and join me, sing hallelujah." But I was 15 years old, an awkward teenage girl, and my body felt like an alien shell. I was about to leave the auditorium and head to the bathroom, a last-ditch attempt to remove myself from the noisy congregation that resembled a bustling marketplace, when the pastor instructed the band to stop. He looked toward the church and announced that it was time for communion, and my grandmother grabbed my arm. There was no escape. A deacon handed me a little plastic cup containing fruit wine. On top was a thin wafer of bread, the sign of the cross imprinted in the middle. "Dip the bread in the wine and place the communion on your eyes," my grandmother said. "If you really believe, if you really pray and cry out, then God will heal you." I sighed, took a deep breath as my insides coiled from shame, and did as I was told. The words came out as a breathy whisper. "Pretty women wonder where my secret lies." Maya Angelou comforted me as I placed wafers soaked in wine over my eyelids, a corner of my heart still aching for a miracle. I had done this many times, and each time there was no result. I had stopped believing that God could even work miracles. But that Sunday, my bones became feeble, as if the very thing that held them together had dissipated, and I asked God for a miracle. For a huge part of my childhood, I felt like I was a piece of clockwork waiting to be fixed. The feeling started early, with the numerous appointments to eye specialists with my mother, trying to see if there was a way to cure my dancing eyes. "It is incurable," the doctor would say, and when we got home, my mother would wail, even though that doctor, like many other doctors, simply confirmed what she was told when I was born on that rainy Thursday in 1998. I was born with congenital idiopathic nystagmus. The American Nystagmus Network defines nystagmus as a complex condition where the eyes move involuntarily in a small, repeated back-and-forth motion, making it hard to see clearly. Nystagmus is believed to affect between 1 in 1,000 and 1 in 2,000 people. Nystagmus affects people in different ways, but it does lead to reduced vision. It can be caused by a problem with the way the eye sends messages back to the brain or how certain parts of the brain make sense of this information. Sometimes it is linked to other inherited neurological conditions or other health problems like albinism or Down syndrome. On some occasions, like mine, it can be entirely random. When I was in first grade, a boy at school called me a witch because I could not make my eyes swivel to the left when he asked me to. I went to the bathroom, sat on the toilet seat, and cried, tears soaking my yellow school uniform shirt, stopping only to breathe or listen to the soft whistling of the wind between the trees. That was the moment in which I learned that there was something permanently wrong with me. I was not a piece of clockwork waiting to be fixed. I had lost too many pieces and would never be fixed.